Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
If I have to parallel park, I'm not going. Don't invite me.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, April 22nd, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, that's Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded one, my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
Ayo! And last but not least, making the magic happen, super producer J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Thanks for joining us live on the YouTubes. We're going to touch on all eight playoff series, as boring as some of them were. Not the greatest opening weekend, if we're being honest, but before that, history was made, baby. On Saturday, Jonathan Isaac blocking Jarrett Allen at the rim for the record-breaking wedgie number 59. That's the all-time high. Well, we weren't done, because Trey Murphy III said, here, take this one too. Number 60 there in OKC on Sunday. So, wedgies on Saturday, wedgies on Sunday. And we're up to 60. It's the all-time record. Go to wedgietracker.com. Just incredible stuff.
I don't know what surprised me more, two wedgies this weekend, or the fact that Spiro Dedis on the call didn't say anything about no dunks. Just not one little thing. Come on, Spiro Dedis. You know us. Maybe you don't watch our podcast, but you know us. Fellow Greek. Come on.
Yeah.
Just a little love.
The Saturday one, too, is like, it just like, it was overlooked.
It was
a record-breaking wedgie, but they didn't even address it.
Right.
And it was like, but hey. History made. It's amazing. We might have, and we're not done. I mean, we might get up to 63, 64. I don't
know. Coming for you, Roger Maris.
That's right.
You're next, Barry Bonds.
That's right. That's
73,
right.
That'd be impressive.
All right, let's get into the series. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to tackle them in the order that they happened. So we'll start on Saturday, build our way up to Sunday, and we're going to do It's Just One Game, But. My God, it is intense. I missed this last year. When you guys did the opening weekend, I think I was running the Boston Marathon. Oh. I was gone.
This guy can't stop running.
I know. And I didn't get to see that intro for It's Just One Game But Live. But here we are. So let's go with Donovan Mitchell scoring 30 as the Cavs open the playoffs with a gritty 97-83 win in Game 1 over the Magic. Trey, you get us started. It's Just One Game But. Where are you going?
Yeah, get out your long orange beards and bug eyes, because it was gritty. It's just one game, but turns out it's hard to score in the playoffs. 97-83. Bit of a rude awakening for the Orlando Magic, because if it's tough for your team to score in the regular season, guess what? Gonna be a little harder come postseason time. The Cavs took the Magic to Clamps Point Theme Park in Clamps, Dusky, Ohio.
What?
I don't know, man. When I think Ohio, I think roller coasters. Cedar Point, Ohio, okay. Sandusky? I just kept thinking about Clamps Dusky this morning.
Clamps
and Dusky. Sounds like an old baseball player. Clamps Dusky.
Meet me and Clamps Dusky. The Magic were there. 83 points for them. 18 of those were fast break points, which means they scored 65 points in the half court in this game. Oh. And honestly, it felt like it. I know Nate Duncan was tweeting out stats during the competitive portion of this game where it was like the Magic were averaging a half point per possession.
Right. Ooh.
50 points per 100 possessions. That's not going to cut it. Orlando shot 32% from the field, 21% from three, and nobody felt it more than my guy Big Rig Bonkero. 24 points, 9 of 17 field goals. That's nice.
Looks okay.
That's good. Nice. 5 assists to 9 turnovers.
Yeah, that's not nice.
Not quite as good. He just could not generate good looks out of the pick and roll, which I thought was going to be something that the Magic were going to have to go to kind of get Bonkero matched up with guards. Instead, it was just packing the paint and trying to dare anybody else from Orlando to beat them, and they could not do it. But from the Cavs' point of view, this is kind of the ideal first playoff game. After the way the season ended last year, after the way they petered out in the second half of the season this year, Donovan Mitchell looked awesome. Best player on the court by far. 30 points. He hit 3 threes, had 3 assists. Just looked springy. Looked like the Donovan Mitchell we're used to in the playoffs. I was shocked to remember the stat that they showed during the broadcast. He's 8th all-time in playoff points per game. Mm-hmm. The guy's had some major, major moments that sometimes get overshadowed by his teams coming up short, but he looked awesome in game one. I also thought very encouraging for the Cavs that both Evan Mobley and Jared Allen had dominant moments. Mobley was great in the first half, 16 points. He hit back-to-back threes, and then it was like the Magic had to switch a small guy on him, took him down to the post, and was scoring really efficiently. That was great. Jared Allen went for 16 points and 18 rebounds. He was dominant inside. Orlando only scored 36 points in the paint. And his defense was a huge part of the reason Bonkero could never really get an open look inside. But they were able to score. Both Mobley and Allen both scored 16. That keeps their defense on the court. There was no time where J.B. Bickerstaff had to split them up. So if you're able to get some offense out of your front court from the Cavs, it's going to be impossible for Orlando to score enough points in this series.
Yeah, they played 23 minutes together at the 4-5, which was something they addressed basically when Mobley just smashed those 2 threes, back-to-back possessions in the first quarter. And then, he was able to take Cole Anthony down in the post because they were switching. That was easy. He also just looked so good on the defensive end. Three big blocks. And that one possession where he went at Paolo Bonkero at the three-point line, and Bonkero pump fake because he was a little worried about him. And then the Cavs were able to steal that ball. So the good defenders on the floor, 16-11 and 3 blocks for him. Great day. Magic can say, you know what? We missed a lot of open threes.
Oh, God.
They did.
They sure did.
They did.
Indeed.
23 wide open three-point attempts, according to the stats. They only hit 5 of those. That's 21%. That's not good. So they were able to generate wide open threes. I guess they can think going to the next game that they'll get them. Because that's what Bonkero said after the game. He was looking at the stat sheet when he was getting interviewed. 32% from the floor, 21% from three, 60% from the line, and it still wasn't over until the last 2 minutes, which is a lie. It was over like 5 minutes left.
He stretched a little bit.
Optimistic,
But he's sort of right. Yeah. This game was there for the taking, because it's not like the Cavs were lighting it up on the other end. In fact, they went over an 18-minute stretch where they hit like 7 field goals, and it was a 4-point game. Like, Bonkero had that and one that made it 60-56, and it was like, oh my God, the Magic have played horribly. They haven't shot well, and they're in it. And then that's when Donovan Mitchell, settled things back down. He hit back-to-back buckets. They finished on like a 13-2 run, and that was enough. I mean, the thing with this one, it was like, when it was a 10-point lead, it felt like 40 with the way the Magic were struggling to score. They finished a game, Orlando did, with a 62.7 offensive rating in half-court possessions. Put this into context. The worst half-court offense in the regular season belonged to Portland at 88.9. The league average, 99. Half-court offense. This was a 62.7. I saw those Nate Duncan tweets when he was saying it was like 85, and it only got worse as the game went on. Suggs, 4-16. Gary Harris, 0-6. Cole Anthony, 0-7. I thought he was brutal.
Yes.
My God, he was forcing things.
The X equals zero for my X factor, unfortunately.
Yeah, and then Fultz, 0-4. I mean, nobody. And even Franz Wagner, garbage game as well. I mean, he sort of got it going late. Maybe that carries over into game two with some maybe more shot making. But everyone's brutal. And they could just pack the paint, like you said, on Paolo and hey, well, I mean, we don't think anybody else is going to beat us. And they didn't really, in the regular season, shoot the ball all that well, and that continued in game one. But it was there. Like, their defense, you know, Jonathan Eisen gets the start, played a lot of minutes. They were coming up with a lot of turnovers. I mean, they got to be kicking themselves because, I mean, again, Cleveland did not play as well as they can play, despite minutes for here and there from Mobley and Mitchell being awesome. Like, oh, Orlando, man. That was sort of just looked like a team like, ooh, this is our first playoff game.
Oh, yeah.
Jitters.
And Max Schrier's got to play way better for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I did like that move by Jamal Mosley. This is a young head coach, or, you know, playoffs in terms of being a young head coach. You throw Jonathan Isaac into the starting lineup. The guy only started two games all year long. That worked out fairly well for them. Evan Mobley obviously shut everybody up. People said he can't shoot the three. In this game, he was obviously awesome. And like we said, he did finish the game very well. Or finish the season, excuse me, very well from three-point line since February 1st, shooting 40% from there. And Donovan Mitchell obviously shut up a lot of people because, as you said, Trey, 2 years ago, the numbers are ridiculous how many points he scored. But he knows that in the playoffs, people are questioning what he is. And that was very apparent when he hit the game ceiling three. It was like 4.5 minutes left. He hit a deep one. Yelled at the crowd. And then he said, what the... They think they know they're talking about. That's what I read it as.
You're reading some.
It was a lot of words. Okay. What the? They think they know they're talking about. You know, it's a little wordy, I thought.
Sure.
But either way,
you never know what's coming out when you're going to start screaming at the end of a game.
But you're right about, like, he had trust in that knee, right? This guy didn't look good for 2 months, which is why, I mean, a big reason why I took Orlando in this series. And it's just one game, but we're overreacting and all that. But man, if Mitchell had the confidence in that. I mean, he looked springy. You said it.
He looked great.
He had that one, that classic Mitchell where he drives to his left, he gets to the paint, touches, then he rises up and hits that little floater. But he's jumping so damn high. So that bone bruise, I guess, that he had for 2 months, it looks like it's fully healed. After one game, he looked amazing.
He did.
And you're right. He's got amazing playoff games under his belt. You know, dating back, obviously, to Utah.
If you want to read into it, the celebration I thought was a little too much for a game one. I thought the Cavs were a little too excited. I think the Magic are still alive in this series. That's all. I'm definitely reading way too much into a celebration. But either way, I think the Magic are still alive because they have spunk. They fight.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
A good sign, obviously.
They do fight.
Yeah.
Because as soon as Mo Wagner checked in, within 3 minutes, him and George Niang were going at each other. Mo drew a technical, I guess, on Isaac Okoro.
Yep.
I don't even remember who he pushed out, but he pushed down something. Okoro got in his face. Instant tech. Mo Wagner, instant villain in Cleveland. But then George Niang scored the first point in the instigator draft.
Yes!
By getting knocked down by Markel Fultz. Fultz just trucks him pretty soon after the Wagner play. And then George got up in his face and got a tech for, you know, they didn't want to go any further.
So I have the minivan. I have a 1-0 lead on you guys, right?
Big.
None of our other guys in our draft, in the instigator draft, got any points. I have 1 point with the tech.
Yeah.
From Niang. I think that's it.
Yeah. Oh, Tatum could have easily got a tech, but he didn't want it. He knows that he was drafted
by me.
Right. So Jaylen Brown got it for him. What a teammate. He got the tech for him.
Hey, I got to say, some people, when you took Tatum, there were people saying you should have taken Brown.
Man, maybe.
Should've went with Jaylen Brown. He's just as feisty as Tatum.
He is. He is feisty.
We'll see. Lots of basketball still to go in the instigator draft, but I'm up 1-0. Anything else on Cavs Magic? Do you believe it's still a series, TK? Again, this is one game, but, you know, Tass thinks so. I'm hoping so because I have Orlando at 6. What says you?
I changed to Cavs in 6 at the last second on our picks, and I wish I would have stuck with Cavs in 5.
Okay.
Orlando can't score enough. Like, you keep talking about these open threes. They're going to be open all series.
Right.
Like, Franz is left wide open. Jonathan Isaac is left wide open. Fultz probably shouldn't play, but he's going to be left wide open. Who can make them? Paolo went 2-for-7. Franz went 2-for-6. They don't have shooters.
Yeah.
They're going to have Cole Anthony get hot, so I don't know. Maybe he starts for Gary Harris. Maybe they say, we got good enough defense. We need some sort of offense out there. But it looks tough. There's a reason the Cavs tanked for this.
Yeah, I would say the guys who would, the starting backcourt should be able to hit shots. Jalen Suggs had his best three-point shooting season this year.
I don't buy it.
He was good all season long.
The playoffs.
So yeah, he was 1-for-7. He should be able to hit open shots. And Gary Harris.
Yeah, he was brutal.
The guy should be able to shoot threes. So that's the those are the two guys.
Listen, I took the Cavs.
I've got the Cavs in this series. Right. I definitely think they should do it. But there's sides of their end that should be able to play better, too. As I said, Strus had 5 turnovers in this game. Max Strus, how does that happen? Didn't shoot well from 3 either. There's lots of good things that they should be better at.
Can the Magic sign Malik Monk, like, right now? Can they just, like, offer him a ton of money and get him in there?
Klay Thompson's agent must be happy.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Got to get some shooting in there. But Cleveland up 1-0 in that series. Okay, let's keep it going here. Wolves take down the Suns 120-95 in game one behind Anthony Edwards and his 33 points. It's just one game. But TK, back to you.
Maybe you like Dame time. Maybe you like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander hitting some big shots. It's just one game, but Anthony Edwards is the playoff MVP. Because to me, the best moment of the weekend, Anthony Edwards trash-talking Kevin Durant. Awesome game for Ant-Man. 33 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 6 turnovers, 2 steals, and he completely took over in the third quarter. 18 points on 8 of 11 field goals. He scored how many straight on Kevin Durant? Cool. I think he hit at least 3 straight jumpers on him, and then had the great moment where they're jogging back down the court. Ant's like celebrating, pounding his chest, screaming at Durant that he's old, and Durant's loving it, man.
Yeah,
Durant's just laughing back at him. Like, this is awesome. That was cool. Afterwards, Ant said, that was probably one of the best feelings ever in my whole life, for sure.
Believe
he
that.
He says Kevin Durant is his favorite player of all time, so just to go head-to-head against him and come out on top and get the trash talk him, that was great. Durant described the scene as just hoop. Just hoop out there. Durant was playing pretty well on his end, so to see Ant go back and forth, that was great. But this is one of the most unexpected results of the weekend, I think. Minnesota blowing out Phoenix in game one. Obviously, Phoenix won the season series. They held Ant to 14 points a game on like 31% shooting. He dominated here, but this was a great Towns game, I thought, as well. 19 points on 5 of 9 field goals, had 4 assists, 7 rebounds. He was scoring in the post. He was passing in the post, making good decisions. He had a really big first half while Ant was kind of finding his way out there. Gobert was dominant, I thought, in this game. 14 points, 16 boards. He had a fadeaway in the post at one point.
Yeah.
Went, 6 for 7 at the free throw line? This might be his best offensive game we see. But the defense, I thought, was pretty special. He was obviously great inside, but the Timberwolves showed no hesitation switching him out on the perimeter, and he did a pretty good job moving with the guards and the forwards there for Phoenix, moving his feet, making shots tough. I mean, Durant was still hitting shots over him, but that's just what he does. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, 18 points. Great defense on Booker. McDaniels was going. He had 9 points. He was playing defense. Naz Reid came in, had a great jelly. I thought this was perfect from Minnesota. They also out-rebounded Phoenix, outscored him second-chance points, won the bench. This was a dominant game for Minnesota, and this seemed like it was going to be one of the closest series, so I assume Phoenix is going to hit back, but great start for the Timberwolves.
What did you see from this one?
Yeah, you can definitely look at it from Minnesota's side and say, we got this thing. But I think Phoenix is one of those weird teams that doesn't put forth effort one game and then, bang, they'll show it the next.
Yeah.
But the first quarter, it was a decent first quarter. It was a close game. But I was surprised by Minnesota's bench and how great they were. That's where it changed for me. And you can look at this and say it's just one game, but this is the most unified team, the most together team in the NBA, because they are just on the same page, the way they had that close first quarter, and then Nikhil Alexander comes off the bench with Naz Reid, and they were so dominant. To be able to score 20-6 in second chance points, 13-3 in offensive rebounds, and the bench outscoring the Suns bench 41-18, I mean, that's just a slaughter in terms of the playoffs. So huge for Nikhil Alexander-Walker, the way he played Devin Booker. He got under his skin a bit, showed him lots of length. And Jaden McDaniels was awesome. Devin Booker was mad. He was arguing for calls. He was upset. He went to the bench with 3 fouls. He got fouls himself. He couldn't find a rhythm there. So, I mean, that was really, it was fun. It was fun to see Edwards talk some smack to Kevin Durant. But I do think this thing ain't over either. I am a little worried about Grayson Allen's ankle. I haven't heard about that. He left the game.
Game 2 in question, for sure.
Yeah, made 0 shots in this one in 25 minutes and then left because of an ankle injury. So, definitely a worry. Some odd stuff from Minnesota. I thought Anthony Edwards being able to hit a bank shot. Okay, that's not odd. Next possession, Rudy Gobert hit a bank shot. Yeah, like a jump. One. A jumper. Yeah. A jumper, not a one-foot bank shot. But that was... I didn't know I was watching NBA playoff basketball there for a sec. I thought I was watching another sport. I was like, what is this?
It was probably the moment of the weekend for sure. Anthony Edwards talking shit to Durant while he's going back after cooking him. Yeah, it must have been three or four buckets. I mean, he was rolling there in the third. And yeah, just to... you know, bring it up again here, the defense that McDaniels and Nickeil Alexander-Walker and even Ant played on Booker, man. 5 of 16. He scored 18 points, but 7 or 8 of those points came in basically garbage time. Like, yeah. It was sort of over. So they really held him. Like, we're looking at, like, 10 points there. And just an incredible job. Awesome game from Minnesota. That place was rocking. I thought that was one of the maybe the best crowds. I know that, you know, Madison Square Garden was bumping as well. And those fans going nuts outside the outside the garden after a game one win. I love the Knicks fans. They're amazing. But they were locked in from the jump. And you're right. I mean, this is weird with Phoenix. It's like, what will happen in game 2? I mean, all three of those guys could cook. They could blow them out. We could be in for a very fun series still here. But after one, you're feeling great about Rudy Gobert being able to play. And the bench coming through for Minnesota. Because this was in a game where Kyle Anderson plays, like, not at all because he's sort of banged up. And he's sort of a key contributor usually off their bench. So,
yeah,
great stuff.
And the bench thing is worrisome for Phoenix going forward. If Grayson Allen is out, he's obviously a starter. But they don't go deep on their bench. They played Eric Gordon, Royce O'Neal, and Drew Eubanks off the bench. So that's...
I would say two of those guys looked unplayable.
Yeah. Gordon, 0 points. Eubanks, 0 points. Gordon's going to have to play.
Yeah, but Eubanks maybe doesn't.
Yeah, Kevin Durant might be looking at 40 to 45 minutes this series.
Yeah, we might get a bowl. Royce O'Neal was good off the bench, but they just don't have a lot of guys off the bench. But the crowd was rocking. They're really rocking to singing Mr. Brightside, if you saw that. I was doing a lot of lip reading this weekend. I was very surprised that Bradley Beal came off the bench during a timeout. Mr. Brightside is pumping in the arena, and he starts singing Mr. Brightside. He knew the words. And it was like deep into the song. It's Destiny is calling me. He was singing it, and then he was doing this. Open up my eager eyes. And then, unfortunately, they cut away because he could have sung. I'm Mr. Brightside. Right. But they cut away. They cut away right there. What's up with that?
Sounds like he was locked in.
Yeah. We were on playback for this game, for this blowout. the only Minnesota Timberwolf that had a bad game, in all honesty, was Crunch, the mascot. Just a garbage performance from him.
Interesting.
Yeah, this we were sucks, talking man. About it on playback. Well, he got Adrian Peterson to sign a ball, right? He's sitting courtside, the Viking running back. Yeah. And he signs it, and then Crunch grabs it, and his big old paw... his big old mitt just, like, smudges it completely. Like, it looked like shit. And he throws it in the stands. And then he was botching he was part of the trampoline sort of, little break with the jumpers and all that. He was throwing bad passes. I mean, he had a brutal game. I expect a big bounce back from Crunch in game 2.
Lights were too bright for Crunch.
So, I'm telling you. But otherwise, the players came through. Let's keep it going here. Knicks dominate the 76ers on the offensive glass in game 1 win. It was one of the closest. Was this the closest? Well, no, outside of OKC and New Orleans. This was one of the closer games of the weekend. Tass, what's your takeaway from this?
It's just one game, but Sixers-Knicks is the best playoff series, period. It's been so good. It was so fun from both sides. Jalen Brunson was the guy that everyone was talking about. This guy's going to be great. But the Sixers showed him some great defense, throwing so many bodies at him. Mm-hmm. Some big bodies. Oubre, Batum, even Tobias Harris. And then Tyrese Maxey was so good against him. He was just so quick. And they sped him up a little bit. And that's what I think Jalen Brunson's problem is from game 1 to game 2. I think he'll be working on that. Tyrese Maxey, maybe he just saw the speed and was starting to act a little too fast because Tyrese Maxey... I'm transitioning to his offense because it was so damn good.
Oh, yeah,
that was so good. I don't know if he's had a better playoff game. Numbers-wise, yes, he's done better than his 33 points that he's had in this game, but, man, he was so insanely good in
the
Madison Square Garden. Yeah, it was really fun. The guys who kept the Knicks in it, their bench, I was so surprised by. Jalen Brunson goes to the bench. Miles McBride hit 5 freaking threes in this game, playing alongside Jalen Brunson, whoever. They don't win the game without Miles McBride scoring 21 points off the bench. Bojan Bogdanović, also great off the bench. You said the offensive rebounds. There was just a lot of heart in this Madison Square Garden team. They were so scrappy. Offensive rebounds.
Pun intended.
Yes.
Okay.
Jalen Brunson, 5. Josh Hart, 4. Isaiah Hartenstein, 5. Mitchell Robinson, 5. All offensive rebounds. Those are their numbers.
7.
Wow!
Yeah. It was crazy.
It was.
I can't believe Jalen Brunson had five offensive rebounds.
Those long ones.
They were scrapping. Yeah. It was so scrappy. I mean, Joel Embiid and how he threw a ball off the glass to himself to dunk a ball was extremely cool. And then, I mean, I almost thought he was possessed there for a second. I thought the way his eyes were moving when he was on the ground.
When he crumpled after throwing it down? Yeah.
Yeah, so he crumples, and the way his one eye was opening and the other eye wasn't opening, I thought that was it. That was the end of the second quarter, or close to the end of the second quarter, so he goes to the locker room, and then he comes out for the third quarter. I was shocked. I was completely shocked. So just the effort I loved in this game. I loved the way Mitchell Robinson played Joel Embiid. He didn't start in this game. It's all Isaiah Hartenstein these days, but he played way more than Hartenstein and finished the game. 30 minutes for Mitchell Robinson, big four blocks in this game, 12 rebounds. I love that possession where he was guarding Embiid, and he bumped him at midcourt with Embiid bringing up the ball, and then at the three-point line, he blocked him. Mitchell Robinson blocked Joel Embiid at the three-point line. This guy is huge. When you look at him side by side with Joel Embiid, you don't think anybody's going to be that huge beside Joel Embiid, but this guy's monstrous at 7'4 wingspan, I think, helped him out. And then, you know, going into the fourth quarter, I was just excited to see Josh Hart interviewed between the third and fourth quarter. I mean, a player being interviewed.
We got a couple of those this weekend. Yeah.
We did get a couple. Yeah. And Josh Hart.
How do they decide that? Sometimes it's coaches and sometimes it's players.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just players like between the third and fourth quarter. These days, like, so there's still two interviews between first, second, and third and fourth.
No,
one's a coach and one's a player.
Jared Allen, I think, was I thought in the Cavs Magic game we got two players.
Oh, really?
One in the like in the spots where they usually do the coaches. Yeah.
Oh,
I
was surprised Josh Hart would do it. Because he wasn't having a great game in terms of his offense. He wasn't scoring, but he said, "Okay, I'm doing it," and he was peeved. He was angry.
Yeah, he was a little angry.
I'm not getting calls. I don't know what these guys are calling out there. And then he goes into the fourth quarter. He hits three monstrous threes at the end of the game, at the 5-minute mark, the 2-minute mark, the 1-minute mark. That was the knockout
there. Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. I mean, he only had 9 going into the fourth quarter. He had 13 in the fourth quarter to total 22. That was a great game. It was a heavyweight fight. It felt like a heavyweight fight. I don't watch boxing, but it felt like one in Madison Square Garden. You know, it's the perfect arena for a boxing fight, I guess. If there is
one. I'm sure they've had some there, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. It felt like it, man. It felt like it. So, fun.
So you
just
think
fun.
This was the best game, and you think moving forward, best series of the playoffs?
Yeah, I think I can trust both teams.
Well, thank God Embiid looks like he's going to play. Because, I mean, Twitter was writing him off. Twitter was saying it was over. It did appear when he went down after the incredible self-alley-oop off the glass. And then he was back in the second half, and he was running the fast break. He threw a sweet dime. I mean, he looked okay. I think he tired as the game went on, for sure. Mm-hmm. And you've got the bigs that New York can throw at him. But, Knicks plus 22 in the rebounding column. Sort of was where the game was won for the Knicks to go with timely threes from Hart in the fourth, and then OG hit one as well. Brunson just started making a simple pass, and those guys stepped into him. What are your takeaways?
Three rebounds for Embiid in the second half. He went 2 for 11, so he was out there. I actually thought he did a pretty good job of impacting the game while having no legs, because he couldn't challenge shots. He couldn't rebound at all. I didn't think he looked very good when he came back, but they said on the broadcast, basically, he felt something in his knee. They told him it was fine, so he's good to play. It's going to happen again. Like, he's going to go down again. It's going to look like, uh-oh, he's done for the rest of the game. And then he'll come back and limp through stuff. And if he's able to pass the ball the way he was, and, you know, he's still big and strong, he'll still be able to score. But he's got to hit the glass, because otherwise it's like the big guys on Philadelphia are Batum, Tobias Harris. I mean, Paul Reed is helpful, but he's so up and down and a risky player to play. I guess Nick Nurse is thinking about playing Reed next to Embiid. Interesting. But they got to do something to mitigate what New York is doing on the glass, because Hartenstein hits the glass hard. Hart hits the glass hard. And then Mitchell Robinson, you mentioned it. The guy was awesome last night. He, I thought, took Embiid out of the game for the most part with his size and his strength. That's definitely something he brings to the table that Hartenstein doesn't necessarily. Hartenstein's a little bit more of a finesse-y kind of guy. So they're going to need Embiid to be a little bit better. Like, they're going to need him to look like he did in the first half. The guy felt confident enough to go off the glass for a dunk in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to see that again in the next few games? I don't know. And if not, it's going to have to be Maxey carrying the team, because he was awesome once he started getting downhill. The Knicks really don't have anybody who can stick with him when he is aggressive like that. So I think it's going to have to be a big-time Maxey series, and then everybody else is going to have to hit threes, because I don't know what they're going to be able to count on from Embiid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Sixers supporting cast sort of shit the bed.
Yes.
I mean, it was Bede doing all he could do on one knee after the break, and then Maxey was amazing. Who else played well except Lowry?
Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry was like easily the third best player for the Sixers.
He was great.
But, you know, Tobias, nothing. Batum obviously fell back to earth after his play-in performance.
Oubre played pretty well. Yeah. I mean, defensively, he was awesome. All right.
They did a great job on Brunson. Their best defense on Brunson was playing from behind. They did the old Harden trick there, where you just like literally chase him, and they blocked Brunson like three times from behind. Maxey and Kelly and those guys, I mean, that was a move, like letting them get there. You know, not that they're letting them get there, but like chasing them and staying within the play. And that was, you could see, sort of getting in Brunson's mind. So they did a good job on him, but yeah, with if Embiid is not healthy, there's no chance. I couldn't believe he was out there for the second half. Mm-hmm. And you're right, TK. I mean, he's still, his conditioning is not there. He was obviously favoring the knee a little bit more and was getting killed on the glass by all these bigs for New York. I mean, and Mitchell, like, he hit two free throws down the clutch.
Yes.
It was a close game, right? He had that double offensive rebound with like 4 minutes to go. That was a big bucket. Had the blocks.
Yeah.
I mean, this was an awesome game for him, who was a guy that was injured all year.
Yeah, it was the broadcasters, I think it was Breen. It said, that's who you want to foul, Mitchell Robinson, going to the free throw line, because he's not a great free throw shooter. And then bang, bang, he ended it. Very strange to see Joel Embiid enter this game. He told ESPN, Lisa Salter said, he told me that he feels 70 to 80% coming into this game. It's a weird ending to his season in that, again, he didn't play in the final game of the season. He sat. Don't you want to try and get things going? And then he had that play-in game where didn't look good.
No.
This one, he looked better than
that. He looked better, yeah.
But still.
He did things in the first 5 minutes of this game on the weekend that we didn't see at all in the play-in game, which they obviously still pulled out. I thought he was moving better. But then, of course, when he collapsed off the oop there, sort of things changed in the second half. Mike Breen might love Kyle Lowry more than I do. That was another note I wrote down. God!
He does.
Mike Breen loves Kyle Lowry. He kept bringing up every little single play. Like, yes, Mike Breen. He is making the small little plays and keeping them in it.
At 38 years old. He made sure everybody knows. Yeah, he was awesome.
Any other notes on the Knicks victory here?
I don't think so.
No. I think we did it.
Yeah. According to Cleaning the Glass, the Knicks rebounded 50% of their own misses in the half court. So they got a lot more chances. Yeah, it felt like it. 23 offensive boards. 26-8 advantage in second chance points. That was the game. All right, final game from Saturday. Jokic leading the Nuggets over the Lakers to take game one. I'll lead this one. It's just one game, but we have seen this movie too many times. Will Liu pointing it out on Twitter. Every Nuggets-Lakers game, it feels the same. It's great. It's competitive. AD and LeBron sort of carrying. And it's clear in the end that Denver is just better. They just like take over down the stretch. And obviously a lot of that's Jokic and Murray, the two-man game. And it was very similar to the games we saw last year in the postseason, games we've seen between these teams in the regular season. They just have their number. They're just better. And Jokic, 32-12, 7 assists, pair of steals. He just dominated for stretches, too. That's the other thing. You're like, it's not all game, but he just takes over for 5-6 minute window, and that's enough. And they took care of business once again. Their ninth consecutive win over the Lakers. Your notes, your thoughts, your tease.
My thoughts were with LeBron James as he sat on the end of the bench looking sad, thinking about how he's going to explain this on his podcast. The same thing happens time and time again. It was the exact same game.
I know.
Skates. Like, Anthony Davis played pretty well.
Oh,
you would almost say that Anthony Davis canceled out Nikola Jokic. 32 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 blocks. Awesome game for AD, and he got ran out of the gym by Jokic. You could see it on that last dagger dunk after Jokic had a dunk nearly on LeBron James, a one-hander on the fast break that I guess it was Dave Pasch was on the call. He said, I guess that was a slam. Next time down the court, it's like the Nuggets play a little defense. They get the rebound. And you can see Anthony Davis, hands on his knees, gasping for breath. Jokic just sprints down the court. Outruns AD. That was pretty sweet, right? Woo, woo. Outruns AD. Outruns LeBron. Maybe gives him a little push off as well. Throws down the dunk. The game was over. It's like they've got the best guy out there. And that he looks like the best guy. It was easy. The guy showed up dressed like a cartoon and dominated. Crazy.
That altitude, man. It's real. Training in it helps out the Jokic and the Nuggets because you're right. AD was tired. He had an awesome game. He was awesome. It was him and AD, and that was it.
AD and Bron.
Sorry,
yeah.
AD and Bron. Excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the difference between the Denver Nuggets is that they can go deep. You're three, you're four, you're five, you're six, you're seven. They had KCP making D'Angelo Russell run and run and run and run and run. Not that KCP had a great game, but I bring up D'Angelo Russell because he didn't. D'Angelo Russell couldn't hit open shots in this game, and that's what happened last year in the conference finals. D'Angelo Russell was awful in that series. He scored just 6 points in the first three games of that series, and then he was moved to the bench for game four. So the Nuggets have a goal. They try and make D'Angelo Russell tired, and they try and Lakers are trying to put him on KC to have him not guard anybody who handles the ball all that much. And looking at it, rewatching those shots that D'Angelo Russell missed when he was 1-for-9 from three, and he was 6-for-20, and then he said after the game, I don't recall the last time I shot 20 shots. I watched them. They're wide open. He was just missing shots. I don't know if we get more Gabe Vincent or Spencer Dinwiddie next time. I was surprised that I didn't see Anthony Davis guard Jokic all that much. That wasn't the one-on-one matchup. But because he is gassed, I suppose it makes sense because he played great and was still gassed. So you're throwing Rui at him. And I don't think the answer is putting Anthony Davis on Jokic, really. I think it's having more good players, and unfortunately that's not really working right now, because like this was a close game in the second quarter, but the Nuggets were just offensive rebounds, second chance points, not turning the ball over, only 6-12. They won all the categories. They just won them.
KCP hit those three three-pointers during that big run there, that 13-0 run that sort of, they took control of the game there in the third quarter. Timely threes, he does this. And D'Angelo Russell, I mean, we got to go over this. He said 6-20, 1-9 from deep. In now 5 postseason games against Denver, he has scored 38 total points. That's it. 16 of 51 shooting. That's 31%. 3 of 24 from deep. That's 12.5%. And his point differential is minus 45 in the 135 minutes he's played in these 5 postseason games. He was really, really good for the Lakers during the regular season. Especially, you know, trade deadline D'Lo. I mean, he was amazing after all that. He has to just hit these shots for them to have any chance. And even then, it's the Nuggets. Like, they don't fear the Lakers, that's for sure. They're totally fine, like, sort of just trading blows for, you know, whatever, 36 minutes. And then there's the stretch where they just run them out of the gym and then it's too much to come back. They have their number. And I thought LeBron looked like he was even, like, exhausted and like, what are we supposed to do? He's like, you can see LeBron, like, how are we going to finally beat this team? How do we beat them? Because they haven't.
They got to try and trade D'Angelo Russell before game two. I think at the very least, they shouldn't play Russell and Reeves together all that often because neither of them can guard. And Russell is so streaky that if he doesn't have it going, you're probably better off going with Reeves and Dinwiddie or Reeves and Vincent and then splitting up Russell to go with the other one of them. Though it's not like Dinwiddie or Vincent did anything. Goose eggs for both of those guys. And then 11, I guess, for Torian Prince off the bench. It was actually pretty solid. Like, not a great bench performance for the Nuggets. So the game was there for the Lakers if they got better performances from these guys who consistently don't show up. So I don't know how they're feeling confident about that. Because you're right. Like, Anthony Davis, they're not going to have him guard Jokic because he can't guard Jokic. And it's a waste of his fouls to have him on it because he'll get into foul trouble. So they try Rui. Doesn't matter. They try LeBron. Doesn't matter. Like, that's the thing. There's no other real adjustments, though. Darvin Ham says he's saving him. He says, I got some adjustments.
Oh.
We didn't want to blow them all in game. Bold move.
Yeah.
Bold move, I think, by Darv. But we'll see. It would be helpful if they had Dwight Howard. Literally, it would be helpful if they had Dwight Howard. That's the last time the Lakers were ever able to stop the Nuggets was when Dwight Howard was playing.
Yeah, I thought there may be a chance when we were talking midseason here and Dwight Howard was hanging out in Taiwan after playing there. I thought there was a chance. Just throw his body at Jokic for 10 minutes
a
game.
Just the idea if we see Denver in a postseason matchup that we have him.
Yeah, but yeah, I think this is the series that's over. I still do think we have... has faith in the Magic, the Suns, and the Sixers making those series, but not with this one. You get a game where Jamal Murray didn't shoot all that well. He was shot 9-for-24, and you still got popped. You won the free throw battle, 19-6. You still got popped. It's the offensive rebounds, 15-6. Transition points, 21-14 that Denver wins. And Anthony Davis quoted after the game, I thought this was good. "We can't be bad at defensive rebounding and transition. We have to be better in both departments. If not, one." Very interesting. Yeah, you're right.
That's pretty smart, actually.
That's it, man. You got pops.
Small steps.
Yeah, and the Darvin Ham's not going to happen. As he tried the let's bring Austin Reeves off the bench for a while this season. That didn't work. It's just they're going with what got them here.
Yeah,
I don't know, they might have some transitions, but that was the game to steal. I thought
right.
Denver's going to get better,
probably.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Sunday. We had some blowouts on
what
Sunday.
This blowout city.
Yeah, we had a good one at the end. We'll get to it, but let's start with Tatum triple double leading the Celtics past the Jimmy Butler-less Heat 114-94 in their playoff opener.
It's just one game, but the Celtics are going to sweep all three Eastern Conference rounds.
Jeez!
We're going to take care of business. 12-0.
Whoa. Let me move my mic around. Yeah, you believe this?
Well, no. I mean, I'm jumping out here on a stage to say the Boston Celtics feel like they are the best team. They didn't just beat the Miami Heat are an 8 seed. You call them an 8 seed. That Miami Heat team was playing defense. They were playing extremely hard on that end. But the Celtics are just so much better. And the reason why I say they can sweep all three rounds is because this was a team performance, 1 through 8, where they are just better. They're just so good. And they feel that way. The way they were playing, they didn't need an incredible game from one guy. Absolutely not. No. But they got 8 guys to hit threes. Freaking hard to do. 6 guys in double digits. So much fanciness, too. It was a fun game, if you're a Boston Celtics fan, to watch Jaylen Brown first minute go behind the back, spin, and dunk it. That was awesome. Kristaps Porzingis is feeling freaking confident. Shooting bombs of threes, just ripping from wherever. He had Jaime Jaquez out on him. You think, okay, this little guy might steal a ball from him. Kristaps Porzingis, pump fake, dribble to his left to get into a three-point shot. I mean, he felt comfortable. Jason Tatum, first postseason triple-double of his career. I'm a little surprised by that.
Yeah.
But
played a lot. He's like nearly at 100 playoff games, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm a little surprised here in year 7, gone to a finals, gone to every freaking conference finals. But he got body checked by Caleb Martin. Didn't say a thing. He just felt so cool and comfortable. They're just confident. He walked away. Jaylen Brown came and stood up for his teammate. Good to see that. But I just think they are, you know, people were worried the last 10, 15 games. Okay, they didn't play great. They could be better. But they're just so confident. Porzingis said it after the game. Maybe that's why I said stage. But he said, that's a tease for what he said, we set the stage for the rest of our path. He knows that one game against the Heat doesn't mean all that much, but they're playing so freaking confident. So yeah, I think there's a chance. I think
wow.
We got Bucks. We got Knicks. Yep.
They look great. And they should come out of the East, which we've talked about. And yeah, they took their foot off the gas over the last 15, 20 games. They weren't playing for anything.
No.
They were so clearly the number one seed. But to sweep all three rounds.
I think there's a chance.
I can't go that far.
Okay, so now they can beat the Heat in a sweep.
Cavs
Magic would be their next matchup. It's either Cavs or the Magic. They could sweep that. They could.
Oh, yes.
They could.
Yes, they could.
So then the big one, the big question, if we're talking about who's Boston going to beat by 4-1 or 4-2, it's the Bucks or
the Knicks.
The Knicks, yeah.
Right.
So,
all right.
That's a chance.
That's a hot take. Spicy.
Yeah, we got to.
What do you think of this game, I guess, specifically?
I would take under 2.5 Eastern Conference playoff losses for the Celtics.
Yeah, definitely under.
Okay.
Yeah, that I think it's pretty solid.
They play with their food sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, they also took 49 threes in this game. They made 22 of them. It's the most the Celtics have ever made in a postseason game. But if you take 50 threes, there could be one game where you make 10 of them. And that would be the game they lose. So I think if the Celtics lose a game in the Eastern Conference, it'll be because they beat themselves.
Right.
But that was not this game. Every player hit a three-pointer that played for the Celtics. This was like a simple triple-double for Jason Tatum. I was pretty impressed. And like Tess, a little surprised that's the first time he's had one in the postseason. But when he had a favorable matchup with a smaller guy on him, whether it was Jaquez or Highsmith, who were predominantly sticking him, he would just shoot over the top of him. Yeah. And then if they were trying to tilt the defense toward him, very patient, dribble, 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 draw a double team, make the easy pass, and then everybody was able to knock one down for the Celtics, including Sam Hauser, 4 for 6. This guy got hot as well. I'm still kind of surprised that only 8 guys played for the Celtics since this was a blowout for the majority of the game, but I guess the Heat did make it a little interesting in the fourth quarter. But yeah, it looks like the Celtics were excited to play against the Heat, and despite the fact that they hadn't played in basically a week, no rust.
No, no. Dominant victory there from Boston. Let's keep them moving, because that one is not going to be a series I think we touch on too much if they take care of business. Harden, Zubats leading the Clippers past the Mavericks, 109-97. Maybe the most surprising result from the weekend when you consider no Kawhi.
It's just one game, but Mavs head coach Jason Kidd's job is on the line. And I mean, if this is a short series, I think he could be fired. I think there is a chance. Now, I still think they're going to have a good series. But I'm going to exaggerate and say I'm wondering about this Mavericks team and the way they came out in this game. This isn't a young team. This isn't Orlando. This isn't a team that doesn't have any experience. And to see them get popped on both ends of the floor, they were extremely bad. They're down 26 at half. I just thought their defense would be way better, because in the regular season, they had the third lowest percentage allowed at the rim, 6th fewest shots at the rim. They're just good in the paint. That didn't happen. Dallas down 24-8 in the paint in the first half. And Gafford was asked, why did your defense start like that? I got to be ready. That might be on Kidd. I think that's a fair question about this team. Luka Doncic, after, again, a terrible first half for this team, they are scored in single digits in the second quarter of this game. How does that happen? He was asked after the game, what happened in the first half? I don't know why it happened. Like, he can say that, and that's totally fine, but this team is set for the next season. This is their team. What you're seeing now is going to be what their team is next year. And again, I don't think this series is over. But this is a Clippers team that didn't have Kawhi out there, that smacked them, because they were just ready. Ty Lue had this team ready. Dallas was not. And so if you get popped and you lose in 4 or 5 or 6 maybe, if it's just a whipping, I think Jason Kidd's job could be on the line. And you can be happy if you're a Mavs fan in 2022 when Dallas made its run to the conference finals. They lost all game ones. So you can be happy. You can be
That's
happy.
A good one.
Yeah, it's a good stat. Shout out to NBA.com for sending me that one. They didn't send it to me. I went to their website. But anyway, so you can look at that way.
Right.
That's it. But, I mean, what are you going to do if you know this is what your team is? They've got everybody signed. They can't really trade a lot of draft picks. I mean, they have a couple. But they don't have that much to just go get and deal something for. So I think this is legitimate in terms of the entire series and how it plays out.
Well, you can't beat game one James Harden, baby. Guy was awesome.
Guy was awesome.
He was.
we were like, is this guy good anymore? Because he did not look it for the last 2 months. He's incredible in game ones. He dominated this game from the jump. Zubats was a monster inside, especially in the first half. The Mavs were down so much. And we're playing so poorly. Like, it ballooned to, like, 30, right, at one point. And it was, like, the classic, you could tell. It was like, they'll cut this to, like, 9 or 10. And it will be too little too late. That's exactly what happened. I think they got it to 10. And then, you know, Clippers took care of business at the end. But what do you take away from this game, this really dominant victory from the Clips?
I thought it was an awesome victory from the Clippers. And I think a lot of it was, like, it's very cliche. We didn't come out strong enough. But literally, Daniel Gafford said that. And the guy had 0 rebounds and got dominated inside by Zubac. So I'm with you on that one, Daniel Gafford. He didn't have the requisite intensity in this one. Kyrie called him out for it afterwards, too. But just wait for game two. That would be my suggestion for the Mavericks, because James Harden last year, game one against the Celtics, no Joel Embiid, he put 45 points up.
Right.
Big win for the Sixers. Followed that one up with a 2-for-14, 12-point outing in the loss in game two. So, like you're saying, Skeets, he's had a lot of great game ones, had a long time to prepare for this one. We have known the matchup for quite some time. He was feeling healthy and rested, and he looked great. Like, coming into the series, I said, Harden's got to be a scorer. He's got to look for his offense because he's going to have favorable matchups. He had Luka on him quite a bit in the first half, just went around him time and time again, got into the lane, easily finished or easily found Zubac. So will we see that Harden for the rest of the series? Clippers need it because we don't know what's going on with Kawhi. He was out, then he was questionable, then he was out. He might not play in the series. That wouldn't surprise anybody. He might come back and be great. That also wouldn't surprise anybody, but weird stuff to see the Mavs come out and lay a complete egg.
Yeah. It was like, it felt like every 50-50 ball or every deflection was like going the Clippers' way. Like some of that was just bad luck to the Mavs, but you know, there was a little more of a fight to obviously LA than there was Dallas right from the jump. Everything, it was so weird. And again, they made it a respectable final score and they did cut it to 10, but yeah, it was like, I mean, you're down 30 in a playoff game. That's going to be very difficult to overcome. And there was that stretch that, you know, they sort of started to make a move there in the second half, but then, you know, it was Paul George hitting timely shots and like just like, they did a great job. This was the best. This was the most surprising result to me with the no Kawhi, just the ass kicking that they laid on Dallas there.
Yeah, Kawhi was on the bench and fully palming a bottle of water. Just how big that palm looks. There's no other word. I mean, what he was doing
Boban
there.
Boban style.
Yeah, does he come out for game two? I mean, that's why this Clippers team looks incredible on paper, because Harden's the number three guy and doesn't have to do what he did last year in Philadelphia. I did like this stat, though, just looking at the Clippers throughout this season. Lal Murray, who covers the Clippers and covers this Sunday and Saturday game where they have lots of matinees, and they're just not good. They're not good at those games for some reason. Harden shot only 37% on Saturdays, 35% on Sundays throughout the season. And then he killed it! He was so good. I mean, 20 points in the first half, and then the second half was just... just holding on a little bit. I mean, it wasn't much of a second half. Mm-hmm. That kind of stunk.
Yeah, they got it to 10. That was as close as they got. Awesome game one there from the Clips. Let's go to Damian Lillard's 35-point first half to help the Bucks beat the Pacers. 109-94. That score looks a little closer than it really was as well. No Giannis in game one. It's just one game, but what do you got?
It's just one game, but it's still Dame time sometimes. Apparently it was all in the first half yesterday. 35 points for Lillard in his Bucks playoff debut. More than Drew Holiday or Eric Bledsoe ever scored in the playoffs for the Bucks. It was all in the first half. That's very weird, but yeah. You'll take it, even if it's only in the first half. Every win for the Bucks without Giannis is kind of like a double win, because now it's like you don't got to hurry him back. You feel a little bit more confident with Giannis being resting up and getting healthy for the latter half of this series, with Dame being able to carry the way he did. 35 points on 11 of 19 field goals, 6 of 10 for the three-point line. 19 of his points came in the first quarter. I just thought it was so smart the way he played it. The Pacers were up on him, so he was driving to the hoop, scored a bunch inside. Eventually, they had to mess around with their defenses, and then Lillard just started raining threes in the second half, doubled them a lot more, pressured the ball a lot more, and Lillard did a good job of getting off it. And since they were up so big, you know, he didn't necessarily have to stay in the same rhythm he was. So I thought Lillard was spectacular. You saw, I'm sure Tass was lip reading at this point. He said, that's what they brought me here for.
Yep.
I mean, I would say that they brought him here for the latter halves of the games, actually. Yeah. Like the clutch shot, sure. That's really what they brought him here for. But being able to carry the team when Giannis isn't playing is another thing they also brought him there for. On the flip side, Halley Hour was canceled, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They said, we can't do any free drinks on this Sunday afternoon. 9 points for Tyrese Halliburton. He shot the ball 7 times. That's crazy. He had 8 assists and 3 turnovers. I think part of it is that we've talked about it a lot. Halliburton isn't necessarily the same player he was the first couple of months of the season. But I also thought, great game plan by the Bucks, sending 2 at him when necessary, forcing Miles Turner to make plays in space, which is not his forte. And then part of it, I thought, was Patrick Beverley did a really good job of trying to keep Halliburton going towards his left, because Halliburton likes to dance. He likes to float, and he likes to step to the right and shoot his sidestep three-pointer, and he could not get that off against Beverley. He did make 1 3-pointer, but it was kind of like a tip-out, I think, on an offensive rebound that he knocked down. So I thought, great stuff, because that matchup there is really going to determine how this series goes, at least until Giannis is back. Dame outplayed Halliburton big time.
Yeah, for sure. And the Pacers, as you said, they changed their defense in the second half. They gave Miles Turner the road to just get that ball out of Damian Lillard's hands. Let's just get out of his hands. That's why he doesn't score in the second half. They did that, and that's what the Bucks were doing against Tyrese Halliburton. They're doubling a lot. Mm-hmm. And so they got the ball out of his hands. Yeah, that's a weird offense that the Pacers were running out there, in how he only had 7 shots and 11% usage rate, his lowest of the season.
Wow.
It looked odd, and Yeah, the Pacers were more ready for the second half, it sure felt like, to be able to go at Damian Lillard, who looked ridiculously fast. I was watching on an over-the-backboard cam. You can really respect and understand how fast these guys are. He just had that twitch speed that I remember in Portland. I didn't remember it from Milwaukee at all. he looked so quick in this game. And for them, Chris Middleton was fantastic in this game. He came through in so many key moments when the Pacers were trying to come back. 9 of 14 for Chris Middleton. That's a guy you really don't think has the same legs that he did 3 years ago when they won the thing. So that's all great. I will say Pascal Siakam is going to have the most points in this series.
He showed up.
He was good. He was 17 in the first half. He led the team. He led the whole game with 36 points.
Yeah. That's a playoff career high, I think, for him.
Was it?
Yeah. I don't remember him scoring that much from the Raps. 36.
Yeah, he came close to that. Yeah. No, but probably not. So he's going to score the most points of anybody because I think they are doing a good job of getting the ball out of Halliburton's hands.
Yeah.
So what's up, Pascal? You got it. And he was good. He was really good in this game.
Yeah, for sure. Middleton going for 23-10, 4 assists, 9 of 14 shooting. You know, got to the line a little bit, knocked down 4 of those. That's a great sign for the Bucks. You know, if you get Giannis back, when you get Giannis back, that you've got Dame doing Dame-like things. You got Middleton. I mean, we got to see the big three there in Milwaukee together for them to have a chance to maybe knock off, obviously. The Pacers, I think they will ultimately take care of, but the Knicks in a second round or whoever they play, and then maybe the Celtics if they get to the conference finals. You got to have a good Middleton, so that's a great start for him here in the postseason. You can see the difference in some of these teams, especially a team like them being older. They had a week off. I mean, we had this whole play-in thing that was going on for a week, and they get a lot of rest, and I think it worked to their favor here in game one. The final game from the weekend, the last game on Sunday night, it was a good one, the closest one we had. SGA scored 28 points as the top-seeded Thunder beat the Pelicans 94-92. It's just one game. But the Pelicans, I believe, are the perfect first test for the inexperienced Thunder here. We've talked nonstop about this young OKC team. Haven't been in the postseason in a while. All these guys, you know, the bright lights. And this is a good test. I mean, this is like a 50-win team. Obviously, there's no Zion, so they're a different team, but they're still scrappy. You saw it here. Both teams struggling to score. A lot of that was like really good defense from both sides and how they attack this. And this is just good, I think, for OKC. I think they're going to win this series. I think they're going to have a much better game two. I could sort of smell like a weird blowout in game two, if I'm being honest. But Pelicans are a good team and great for OKC to here get some like, oh, damn, this is the playoff sort of reps here early if they have you know, plans to go quite far here this postseason as a young squad. But 20 lead changes we had in this. One more than the 19 combined lead changes in the first 7 playoff games that we just talked about for an hour. There's 20 in this game, and obviously a big one late when SGA, who had sort of like a sort of quiet, you know, first sort of game here for OKC, he just hit the timely buckets, created his space. He had the and one, and that was enough after, I guess, the Pelicans had taken a lead there on Ingram. But fun game.
Mm-hmm.
Just Pelicans went 1-for-7 in the final 3 minutes of the game. 3 turnovers, and OKC pulled it out.
A lot of dirty diapers, I thought, in this on both sides. Right. Neither team really wanted to win this game, so I thought a major missed opportunity for New Orleans, because this one was stealable. You know, if Zion's playing, I think they easily win this game. I think the Thunder are probably like, good thing we weren't playing the Lakers in this one, a team that keeps their head and makes smart plays. But
hence why it was like, this is the team, like a good first test, like the first game. It didn't look pretty.
It didn't look
They're going to get better. They're going to look better.
They're going to be better. Because like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he was pretty shaky in the fourth quarter. Like minutes 5 through 4 of clutch time from minute 5 to minute 1, not good. A lot of turnovers. Throwing it to nobody.
Yeah.
And then he hit a couple of miracle shots to put him over the top. On the flip side, the Thunder are closing with 2 rookies and a second-year guy, and they're all making huge plays. Chet had 2 nice blocks on Larry Nance. I was wondering if maybe Willie Green wanted Jonas Valanciunas back in. He big beefed last night. His interior presence may have helped down the stretch, but that's the way that the Thunder or the Pelicans have been playing for a while, is sitting Valanciunas at the end of games for Nance. And then on the perimeter, Cason Wallace. I called that this guy was going to be closing games for the Thunder in the playoffs before the trade deadline. I can't believe it was game one, though. Yeah. Clamping CJ McCollum, who looked old, man. He could not get around this young buck out there. Cason knocks it out of his hand. I guess CJ hit him with the pump fake, step through, hit the rim. But like, if you lose on that shot, you lose on that shot. I thought awesome defense by Cason Wallace there. So, Thunder kind of lucky to get away with a win game one here, and just a bummer for New Orleans because they should have won this, I think.
Yeah, they are kicking themselves right now because they honestly could have played a lot better. They didn't shoot the ball well from three-point land. They just could take advantage of some of the things that the Thunder messed up with. Even Chet's missed free throw with 14 seconds left. It just looked like, okay, CJ McCollum has a chance. But, yeah, Cason Wallace, yeah, playing way beyond his years. It is amazing that they're playing with two rooks, and Chet, who had a great game defensively. He was awesome, blocking shots all over the place. And to go along with, you know, J-Dub and Shea, who did not have a great game. He just wasn't himself.
I mean, he hit the buckets when he needed to.
He did.
Those were two big shots.
He did, but all three of his turnovers were in the fourth quarter. Yeah. They came late, and he missed all of his threes. Now, Herb Jones was awesome against him.
Yeah,
there's no doubt.
Yeah.
That's their matchup. But shout out to Dagnott for changing it up a little bit, getting him on switches, and that helped out. Now, they had a great Trey Murphy game on one side. I mean, I guess he can slow down, but
do you
really,
think this
they,
will
get,
be a
they
long
get better.
Series? Because I heard Bill Simmons saying, like, this one, he's thinking this could be a seven-game series with how the Pelicans looked. I actually think the opposite, because you guys just went over it. Like, that was the one they had to get, and they didn't. OKC's going to play better. I think they're going to stomp them in game two. I just got the weird feeling that they got this one out of the way. They somehow escaped with it. But
what
do you
think?
They
could stomp them. Yeah. They could definitely stomp them. They have enough people. I'm a little surprised. Dagnall's a great coach, but going 11 deep as he did throughout the season is weird. Gordon Hayward just doesn't have his offensive anything. He's just not the same guy offensively. Yeah. He's good defensively. But if they play their better players, I think they'll be better. That's my real research here on this game. It's hard to say what you'll get in the second game for OKC. I guess they just have to get one out of the way if they have a good game. That's all they needed to do, and that's what you're saying.
I mean, both teams struggled to shoot. 43% for OKC, 10 of 32 from deep. Pelicans worse, 38% from the floor, 11 of 39 from three. So both teams, I mean, this is why we got a 94-92 score here. I mean, going back to the, to the 90s here with this one. But I just think, man, it was there. It was there. You guys went over it, and they played well, and then they just sort of 1 of 7, like I said, down the stretch. The Pelicans, like, just after they took the lead, it was – they could not generate good looks. And a lot of that was great defense. And I just think OKC is going to get better as we go on here in the postseason. But I could be wrong. Hopefully I am. Hopefully we got a great series here in a 1-8 matchup.
OKC didn't even have a really good post-game interview like they usually do.
No, they knew it.
They knew. They knew. It was Shea was primary, you know, in the spotlight. He felt bad. He didn't feel good. And yes, good move by Stephanie Reddy to give them the microphone to hear some barks. but it wasn't. J-Dub wasn't even there. I guess he
was barking during the game.
Yeah,
got his barks out early.
Right, I think what was happening was like you had the TNT interview going in one spot, and then like the local interview was on the other because it looked like the background guys were like switching between the two primaries to like just agree with what everybody was saying. You know? They were thrown off by an extra interview.
So there it is, all 8 games. You can overreact after one. You can say, look, all these teams are going to bounce back. We're going to have some good series. We got 3 more games tonight. It's already forgotten. We get into the games too. For game twos for 3 of these games tonight. Got some overlap here for the first time too tonight.
Little lappers.
Yeah, we got like a 7 and a 7:30, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But before all that, before we look at the schedule and all that, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Well, TK, you slipped it in there. Jokic showing up like a cartoon character for his game one against the Lakers. And Katie Wingy of the Nuggets, she tweeted, just when you thought it was impossible to like Jokic anymore, he shows up in this Despicable Me 4 trailer. Let's watch it.
I thought I look really good that day. I put on this beautiful suit that said, I mean business.
Like the one you're wearing?
Yes.
Then what happened?
They say I looked like Gru.
Why does that bother you?
It doesn't.
Then why bring it up?
Because they won't leave me alone.
They?
Guys, I'm not your boss.
Illumination's Despicable Me 4.
Oh, wow. Hear that music at the end?
I heard it.
Sounds familiar. So, that was a very fun trailer commercial for Despicable 4. Despicable Me 4. Not easy to say for some reason. And then he showed up as Gru. So he really leaned into this. You know, did they pay him extra for this? I want to know. But he, Jokic here, side-by-side pics of him and Gru from Despicable Me. Got the scarf. He's got the little, you know, zipper jacket.
I did see he didn't wear the scarf for the post-game interview.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this was, you know, a sponsored look.
Yes, indeed.
And very, very funny. And so off of that, the final tweet here, just about the game, Henry the Blasian tweeting, and this went basically viral, the old photo or pic of LeBron, current LeBron, right, talking to young LeBron back when he was in high school. Find a man named Nikola Jokic. Convince him to pursue horse racing full time. This is what current LeBron is telling old LeBron, because, yeah, can't beat the Joker. Can't beat Gru. You like the Despicable Me movies? Have you kids? Are they good? Oh, yeah. I've never seen a single one.
I giggle. I love Minions.
Yeah?
I'm a Minion guy. Oh,
yeah. I'm a Minion man. They've made six of them. This is the sixth Despicable Me world movie that's coming off, because the Minions have their own spinoffs.
Right, right.
Damn, see what Kevin's up to.
So Gru's not in those other ones, spinoffs?
No, he is.
Weird.
But it's like the Minions are the star. And they're like, I don't know, the last one I saw was Minions The Rise of Gru, set in the 1970s.
So this guy's a likable villain. Is that the thing?
Oh, yeah.
Very
but likeable. He hates the Minions or they're his bros.
Yeah. You got it.
Oh.
No, he hates them, but they're his bros.
Okay, cool. Right, I gotta watch this. JD, you watched any of these Despicable Me's or Minions?
Yeah, I saw the first one. It was a delight.
Yeah.
But the Minions are my least favorite part of it.
Oh.
But,
geez.
You know, I'm an old, crusty bastard. But my kids liked it. Yeah, I am very Gru-like. but yeah, it's the first one's really, really good.
Okay.
But these are like... In pub trivia, they'll say, name the top 10, you know, most, the highest grossing Steve Carell movies. And like these, Despicable Me, 1 through 5 are the answers. And then you just got to come up with like 40-year-old virgin and all
right,
that.
Right, right. But you forget about these.
You forget about them.
Yeah. Who is he? His voices, right? Is
that... Yeah, he plays Gru.
He's Gru.
I can't believe that. I guess.
Believe it, man.
You won't believe who does the Minions.
Yeah, I mean, who? You're wrong.
Jack Nicholson.
No. Oh. The Minions are great because they collaborate a lot of languages. They speak so many languages.
They do, yeah.
They do?
So fun, yeah.
They speak English?
It's like a hybrid of English, Portuguese, and something else.
Yeah, it's got Spanish. Mini-ies. It's got French. Yeah. I thought it was Spanish, French.
Yeah.
But,
I think the guy who does the voice is like the director.
Oh, yeah.
This guy's just Minion.
Oh, the Minions?
I think so.
Okay.
Something like that. But man, I saw the first one, I believe, in theaters way back when. I can't believe they've made six of them. Yeah. First one was good.
This is great.
Do you think whoever came up with this idea for the trailer, get Jokic involved, you think they were pumped that the Nuggets drew the Lakers? They basically look like Minions in their yellows. Pretty similar.
Gru versus the Minions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow. Okay.
Well, so he never fights them. Like, what is... I don't understand what's going... I don't know the premise of this movie at all.
I mean, in the I've only seen the first one. In the first one, they're his little henchmen. They're Minions.
Who's
Minions.
Who's the protagonist in these movies?
Well, Gru is, but I guess he adopts a little girl, right?
Oh!
Yeah.
And he basically goes... It's like it's Breaking Good, basically. He's a villain, but then he's like got a heart of gold.
Okay.
Then there's another villain who's the villain.
Right. Oh, super villain.
Vector.
Yeah. Right.
What's he look like?
Cereal.
He's a Jason Segel character.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
Damn, I got to watch it. Maybe, we were trying to think up a new movie franchise to watch during the summer. No,
it's not this.
So people were really pitching, people were pitching old James Bond movies.
Okay, sure.
Not bad.
Like
they
Sean Connery.
Yeah. Like
George Lazenby.
Roger Moore.
Roger Moore.
Yeah, way back.
Fear Eyes Only.
There have got to be some hilarious.
Oh my God. Fear Eyes Only is one of the funniest movies ever made.
I've never seen it. And that's the thing. I haven't seen a lot. You probably haven't seen a lot of the
original Bonds.
It's
perfect for an Olympics year.
Not a lot of them.
No, no.
I don't know.
Okay. I still want to do Twilight.
You know?
Okay, well, I'm fine doing Twilight.
But I think a little Despicable Me is
romance in my life. Sure.
The top of the charts. Okay. There you go. Great tweets. Tonight, three games on. We're right into the game twos. Obviously, we'll be back tomorrow morning to break them all down, and hopefully, we'll get some some more closer results, some more entertaining endings. Because that wasn't the greatest opening weekend when you look at it, like we just did.
No.
There was a lot of blowouts. in like 4 or 5 of them. So anyway, we'll get some closer games tonight. We'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern. Until then, Clipper Bros!
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, that was Nikola Jokic's best acting performance I've ever seen. It was pretty good.
You think that's better than his hotels.com?
I don't remember that.
Him and the pony?
I think I've only had one, so his best is worse. But he was very well spoken.
Did you believe the minions were in the window?
Yeah.
I thought he was okay.
I thought he was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always believe the minions are everywhere.
Oh, yeah. You're a big minion.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan.
I liked the post game that Jokic said, I love the guy. I think he's a real dude. Love the guy. Good guy.
Somebody asked him about it?
Yeah. Like, they asked him about being Gru. He's like, I love the guy. Love the cartoon. My good friend Gru. Gru Smith.
Chris today, people.